Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fine Water Podcast Network, I am your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is Lieutenant James Cabral. Hi, James. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. I'm excited. We're here to talk about the 20th episode of Season 8, Lend a Hand. It originally aired on February 4th, 1980. But James, you know what question's coming first. How did you become a fan of the show?
So I am of a particular age. I'm 47 right now. So I was alive when the show was still on, but I do not remember any of it. I guess I was 4 years old when the final episode aired. And all I remember from growing up is that it was on in syndication and reruns. My parents, I wouldn't ever say that they were big fans of any television show, but MASH was one of those shows that they would have on at sort of the random times that it was on. And one of the times that it usually was on was right before dinner time. So
right.
My parents were very routine oriented. Dinner was always at 6 o'clock. We would have the news on. I would come down at 5:30. I had to set the table and MASH would be on. It was just constantly there. It was part of my childhood, and it became something that I was just used to. Cheers was another one that was on kind of around that same time, but it was MASH that I really remembered and kind of connected to. And then sort of after I went to college, I lost touch with MASH. It wasn't on in reruns, and I was in college, so I was busy with other things. But when I went to graduate school and I was living alone, I was in a very stressful environment. When the DVDs, the season DVDs first really became available, and I was, you know, had some income, I'm like, I'm going to buy these. So I bought the first 6 seasons, I remember, and I watched them all the way through. And as you mentioned constantly on the podcast, there were scenes that I did not see before because the syndication had cut them out.
There you go.
I was fascinated by seeing all of those things. And it really became comfort food. I have always been a very anxious person. and we could talk about Hawkeye and mental health in future episodes. but I used it as kind of like a crutch. Like, I am familiar with these characters. I find comfort in just seeing them over and over again. Plus, there's so much important, I would say, empathy that sort of develops, that you can develop from watching this show, you know, because you have characters like Hawkeye and BJ, pre-mustache BJ, and Sidney and Father Mulcahy, that you can like learn how to appreciate other people and understand other people. And so that kind of grew with me. And then when the show was released on streaming on Hulu, my wife and I were in kind of like a zone where we were watching entire shows front to back. So we did Star Trek Next Generation front to back. We did, even though we can't watch it anymore or say his name anymore, Cosby Show. Mm-hmm. We watched that. And then the next one was MASH. And so she watched it with me all 11 seasons. And I can't say that she got the same thing out of it as I did, but she was at least willing to do that. And it reminded me how much I really enjoyed the show. And so even now I will put episodes on or entire seasons on when I feel stressed out, when I want to just be like, okay, this is comfort. These things make me laugh, sometimes make me cry, but I really feel comfortable with these characters. And so even to this day, I'm still watching.
Isn't it amazing to think that a show steeped in, as Sidney Friedman put it, mud, blood, and death is comfort food to so many people? There's something really amazing about that. I mean, there's a lot of other sitcoms that Cheers, like you just mentioned, right? There's no life and death in Cheers, right? Or as you mentioned, the Cosby Show, or a million other shows that you could easily say, well, that's comfort food. But no, this show about people being, dying on the table, or, you know, like, that's comfort food. And there's just something about MASH that has that, even though the setting doesn't lend itself to being considered comfort food.
We live in very stressful, dire times, and That's an
I don't know what are you referring
understatement.
to, Jay?
But there's always kind of like a yearning to find the people that provide comfort. As an aside, I've always been a big Mr. Rogers fan ever since I was little, and his big thing was always look for the helpers. And it may sound a little maudlin to say this, but these were the helpers, and they're doing such wonderful things in such extraordinary circumstances. And if you turn on a medical show these days, and there are so many of them, I don't think you see the same level of interaction with the characters growing together. Like, how long is Grey's Anatomy on there? And I've watched a couple of episodes, but you don't get the same kind of understanding and gentleness that you often get from these MASH characters. I think it's been lost, those kinds of relationships that you see a lot of the time, at least
It
on the TV that I watch.
might also be that MASH is, and this to borrow a phrase that's in the culture now, competence porn, in that these are people who are really good at their jobs under extremely trying circumstances. And that is comforting to watch, right? There's very few things that Hawkeye or Colonel Potter or Winchester are not going to be able to handle despite all the challenges that are thrown at them. But it's just, again, it's just sort of amazing. Now, as a side note, and again, everyone's different. I would never presume to say it. One way is better than the other. It's just, for me, there is something comforting about a show like MASH that has hundreds of episodes that you talked about watching it with your wife from front to back. You could start watching it, and depending on how many would you watch with her in a given day? Did you, I mean, obviously,
Two or
was it two or three?
well, yeah. I mean, it was two or three. I mean, my son was, little at that time, so we had like that precious, hour or 2 hours of time between the meal and the bedtime, and then exhaustion. So it was kind of like two or three, maybe.
All right. So yeah, you go two, three a day. That's what, like 10 a week, and that's a 40 a month. So that's a couple of months,
At least, yeah.
as opposed to like a Netflix show that does 26 episodes and then it's done. Now, again, I'm not trying to say that, you can enjoy TV that way, but for me, there is something comforting about knowing, oh, I enjoy this thing, and there's so much of it, as opposed to, well, I'm gonna wind my way back to the beginning in like 6 hours, Like, and there's something like, I'm gonna keep watching this show for a really long time before I get all the way back to the Trapper Hawkeye years again, And there's something to that, having 251 of them to watch.
Yeah, I mean, the television landscape has changed so much. I mean, we're now much more like the British kind of model, where it's smaller seasons, and they're not always kind of on that regimented September to May schedule. And I think, in addition to MASH, there's always something based on your mood that you can get to. You have the lighthearted episodes that are earlier on. You have the more serious episodes. If you want to sort of do a crapshoot, you pick an Alan Alda episode, and then it may be silly or it may be very serious, and we'll talk about that later with this one. So there's something that you can find even within all of the 200 some episodes that really, it's like, kind of matches your mood at that moment.
That's absolutely true. Now, do you have a particular favorite era? Oh, I mean, I'm guessing by the fact you wrote to me by the time we got to season eight, maybe it's this, but maybe not.
Well, I mean, it's I think the sweet spot is kind of like 2 to 6, because you have a little bit of the early kind of shenanigans episodes, and then the writing increases in quality, and you get the really, really good, end of season 3 through season 5. And then I kind of like the introduction to Charles, and then after that it becomes sort of hit or miss. And I just listened to your episode for Period of Adjustment with, I think, Molly and Phoebe,
All 6 hours
and
of
how
it.
well, yeah, it was. I mean, but it was, there's such good guests,
Oh,
and
they were wonderful. I'm busting stone. No, it was wonderful. It was wonderful.
I don't want to call it an obsession, but maybe they would say an obsession
Oh,
with BJ. And
I think they would say
yeah,
obsession.
I love clean shaven BJ. I love the more new, empathetic, still kind of happy, non-jaded BJ. And then, as soon as he gets that mustache, there's a change in personality, and you know, and with period of adjustment, you sort of see why and how much he's missing his family. But not just him, like kind of show gets less warm and a little bit more serious and angry, I would say. And that comes along with the sort of transition from humor to drama. But I think he's the one that really gets more of an edge. And a lot of times that goes to anger, and it just, I mean, it makes him a more complex character, but I don't really like him as much as you get towards those later seasons. And then when you get into like the AB plot episodes, it becomes kind of more hit or miss. And so I, with the later episodes, I just pick and choose the episodes that I like seeing and then skip over a lot of the other more filler ones.
Fair enough. All right. Well, let's get to Lend a Hand. As I mentioned, it aired on February 4th, 1980. It is written and directed by Alan Alda. And so we'll realize the reasons for that after we finish up the synopsis. Mm-hmm. Everyone is cold and bored at the 477th, which leads to crankiness. When a bunch of people ask Hawkeye strange questions about his favorite this or that, he finds out that BJ told them all that Hawkeye's birthday is coming up, just to give them all something to distract themselves with. Hawkeye is not amused. Yet the boredom is broken when they get a visitor, Dr. Anthony Borelli, who has previously visited the camp a year or two earlier. He's at the 477th to show the doctor some new surgical techniques, including a graft procedure. Borelli tends to be a bit pushy, especially to Hawkeye, insisting he knows the best way to do nearly everything from where Hawkeye should sit and what he should drink. The next day, Borelli is about to start his lecture, after telling everyone where they should sit, when a call comes in from an aid station about a patient that needs major surgery immediately. Potter agrees to send someone, and Hawkeye offers to go, thankful to escape his impending birthday party. In the process, he throws BJ under the bus by letting it slip that it's BJ's anniversary, which it is not. At the aid station, Hawkeye and Borelli immediately start to argue about the best way to approach the operation. Borelli thinks he should start with the chest, but Hawkeye insists that the man's collapsed lung is the most important. The argument spills over to how Hawkeye washes his hands, which leads the medic to break it up and wonder what the problem is. They ease down, but it flares up again when Borelli suggests to Hawkeye that the patient will need the kind of graft he was there to talk about. Bombs start to fall right outside, one of them landing close enough that part of the roof caves in on them. It leaves Hawkeye with a sprained wrist and Borelli with a broken arm. Now what? With no other options, Hawkeye and Borelli are forced to work together, literally leaning on one another to complete the surgery. Later, they bring the patient back to the 477th and they perform the new graft procedure, which is a complete success. So, James, I'm going to assume you know the same, you know the reason that I do, which I'll allow you to get into, is why Dr. Borelli was brought back?
I mean, I don't know the specific reason. I'm assuming it's because the two of them wanted to do an Alda family drama episode or something similar to that.
Close to that. Apparently, Alan Alda had a somewhat strained relationship with his father, Robert Alda, the legendary Robert Alda, at this point in their lives together. And this was a sort of peace offering to bring Dr. Borelli back. Now, I mean, it worked out perfectly that Alan Alda just happened to be the major creative force of the most popular television show on the air at the moment. And his father, of course, had played Dr. Borelli in The Consultant in season 3. Now, of course, in TV time, that was 5 years ago, but in Korean War time, that was maybe 9 months, 10 months or something. We don't know. But that is why Dr. Borelli is back, even though he does not act like the Dr. Borelli from that episode at all.
Oh, goodness, no. It's I mean, when you go back and watch The Consultant, which I did several times as sort of background for this, you see how much of a complex character was built for Borelli in that episode, where he, you know, he has a kindness to him, a gentleness to him, but then when he has to deal with the war again and he kind of breaks down and then has the sort of the conflict with Hawkeye, it's a three-dimensional character built in 23 minutes. And then you see what was written for this episode. It's a completely different character. I felt like this is sort of the mirror universe Dr. Borelli, and all he's missing is
Dr. Borelli, your agonizer, please.
Yes, exactly. Like this, it doesn't feel like the same character. And what kind of shocks me is that if Alan Alda was you know involved in bringing Robert Alda back, it feels like a completely disconnected, separate entity from The Consultant. It doesn't feel like the same character.
No, it doesn't.
And I was really disappointed in that because I really liked that Borelli character from The Consultant. And it would have been interesting to see, okay, he's back. How is he, you know, is he going to break down again? But that's kind of just forgotten.
Yeah, the Consultant is a terrific episode, and Robert Alda delivers a fantastic performance as Dr. Borelli, especially that final scene with the whole, you know, I've been through three wars, you know, let's see how you do on your third war, that kind of thing. It's really, really great. It's a very, very funny episode, and then it gets deadly serious at the end.
Yes.
I think it's just a terrific show. I'm guessing that had Robert Alda not been in the show in season three, Alan Alda would have written this anyway, right? Mm-hmm. He just would have written him in as a new character, as, oh, here's a character, you know, here's a doctor coming to visit who's going to teach us about a graft. Oh, and he pushes Hawkeye around, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it just happened to be, oh, wait a minute, he was already on the show, so we'll just write him again. And, you know, I always criticize, I'm always chiding MASH for its loose continuity, let's put it,
you know,
and here's one moment where they're actually bothering to have continuity. They're actually bothering to bring him back as the same character, as opposed to just saying, well, he's Dr. Smith, you know, or whatever. So, okay. But yeah, it is a little jarring if you watch the episodes back to back, because you're like, wait a minute, why is he acting this way?
Because they had so many other actors that played multiple parts, particularly the Asian actors. I mean, you had
Soon Tech Oh and stuff.
Soon Tech Oh and Mako, and you know, they really did a lot with small number of really, really excellent actors.
Yeah.
And I think you could have created a completely separate character for Robert Alda that would have made much more sense. But you know, I get it. The name is already there. You don't have to worry about trying to add 5 minutes into the episode to introduce a new character. You already have the background for the MASH watchers who remembered five seasons before.
Yeah, I mean, except for one single line of dialogue in this episode, you wouldn't know that he ever was there. And we'll get to that, right? Because there's a line of dialogue that Margaret has that connects it up. And if you happen to, you know, get up to get a snack or look down at your phone for a second or whatever, you might miss it and just be like, okay, this is just this Dr. Borelli guy. Okay, that's fine. Oh, actually, no, that's right. I take it back. There's a couple lines where Borelli mentions something. Anyway, we'll get to it. So the show opens with a pan across a bunch of people in the 477th. And I like this shot because all the people that we're seeing are kind of the background people, which is nice, right? They don't often get their face directly in front of the camera. Like we see Gwen, and we see Nurse Kelly, and even though they don't have any lines of dialogue, it's, you know, it's just nice. Like, okay, yeah, these are the other denizens of the 477th, you know, finally get to be right in the camera. So Klinger has this gag. We see that it's obviously freezing cold, and Klinger jokes about that there's nothing to do, and he says, you know, hey, you know, they should all let us go home. And, you know, if the war heated up, I'd come right back. Don't worry about it and stuff like that. And of course, Winchester, he says that to Winchester. Winchester makes fun of him and stuff like that. And then you see that everyone is just super cranky. Of course, when you're bored, and you're cold, that is a dangerous combination, right? Because who wants to be either one of those things? Can I ask you, James, would you rather be bored or cold if you had to pick one of the other?
Well, I live in the great northern Midwest, and so I've been cold a lot. I would rather be bored. I do like to bundle up. So I can keep myself occupied if I'm bored. I'm sure I could find something to do, but I would not like to be cold. I hate being cold.
Okay, fair enough. There's a reason why we moved to Florida. I think you can guess what my answer is on that particular question. So they're all cranky with one another. And then Potter tells a story where he says, I remember one night in France in World War I, an entire company of tanks froze shut. And he says, we couldn't get the drivers out, so we had to slip them victuals through the cannons. So another example of the young Sherman Potter Chronicles, right? Mm-hmm. That we get to see.
Yep.
I love Winchester's response as Colonel. In the first place, I don't believe a word of it. I like that he's just openly like, you're bullshitting, Potter, and I know it. I like that he's that he's that free to say that to his commander.
I mean, we've seen a lot of the Harry Potter Colonel Potter stories from before, like the young Sherman. I said Harry Potter. Oh my goodness gracious. That's what kind of That's a whole nother thing. Sherman Potter. But you know that they have heard these stories multiple times, and they've heard some really tall tales. And there have been previous episodes where, the other doctors have looked at him like, yeah, we don't believe you when you're telling these stories. And he even says, I think at one point they're in the OR, and he's like, oh, no, really? I think it was he had to do a peachectomy on one of his wife's friends or something like
Oh,
that.
the
And they're like,
peach
oh,
pit.
the peach pit. Yeah, so it's the eye roll that you get is just really telling about, oh, not another old Sherman Potter story. We're done with this. We don't want to hear these anymore.
I just love the his. First of all, I don't believe a word of it. It just makes fun of him. I'm like, that's great. It's a wonderful delivery by David Ogden Stiers. So then we find Hawkeye in line, and he's talking to one of the nurses, and he's flirting with her, and she says, "Why don't we have a stimulated conversation? What's your favorite color?" Which of course throws Hawkeye off because it's like, "What the hell kind of weird ass question is that? I'm trying to flirt with you here." She leaves, and then Mulcahy shows up and asks Hawkeye to make a fist with a tape measure. And of course, that's another strange question. And it leads to him measuring Hawkeye's boot. And Winchester's like, I mean, excuse me, Mulcahy is like, these measurements don't match up exactly right now. Of course, Hawkeye finally figures this out, goes to his pal and says, I'm getting some very, very strange questions tonight. Well, how big is my foot? What's my favorite color? What's going on? And that's when BJ reveals that he has let it slip that it is Hawkeye's birthday. Now, how does anyone not know Hawkeye's birthday at this point? He's
I
been in
know
the universe
exactly.
a long time.
This is sort of the suspension of disbelief here because they're such the two of them are such close friends, but the our major characters are also close now. The Colonel's anniversary, we've already gone over the Colonel's anniversary. I don't think they do a lot of birthday parties
No.
in as I recall, but they would know. So I mean, BJ's such a prankster. He's so good at coming up with things. You'd think he would have something better than Hawkeye's birthday, for
Yeah.
even for everyone that's bored.
Yeah. Come up with something else, for God's sakes. But yeah, I mean, it's like he's been here longer than you have, BJ. How do you know? Like, he's probably slept with like six or seven of the nurses at this point. Like, presumably one of them has had a discussion. But okay, it's fine. We know BJ's a prankster. Okay, or whatever. So of course, then Hawkeye is furious, and BJ is like, no, you're going to love it. You're going to love it. So then Dr. Borelli arrives. Margaret issues Klinger a bunch of orders. She says to Colonel Potter, aren't you going to come out and meet Dr. Borelli? And Potter kind of chides her and he says, just waiting for orders, Major, which is very cute. I love the little look that she gives him just as they're heading out of the mess tent, right? Just the kind of like, she's like, okay, all right. So like all that. So then Dr. Borelli comes out again. And as you said, played again by the great Robert Alda, had a big Hollywood career in the 40s and 50s, and then kind of moved on to television. And he's got a wonderfully mellifluous voice. He sang a lot in some of the movies and stuff. So he had this kind of he's got the really deep, hello, Major. And I'm bad. I'm murdering it by trying to imitate him. But he's just got a pleasant voice to listen to. And so, oh, go ahead.
I tried doing like a sort of a deep dive to find any of his work other than this, and you can find, I think he was on a spy show in the 60s, but on YouTube you can find where he's doing like a almost like a vaudeville song and dance. There's one video that I found, and he's really spectacular. And so you can see like sort of like that old school did song and dance and acting all together, and it was really fun to listen to. So anyone who's sort of looking for that kind of thing on YouTube, you can find some of his performances, and they're really wonderful.
Yeah, he had a very long Hollywood career. And he worked in vaudeville before that, as did his son when Alan Alda was like four or something, like he was like a little kid who would come out. By the way, I should mention that Robert Alda was in a really terrific horror movie called The Beast with Five Fingers from 1946. It's not one of the most famous ones you've ever heard of, but it's a kind of an off-brand one. And it's a terrific little thriller horror movie. So if you want to see him in a completely different kind of context, you can watch him in that. So Dr. Borelli and Margaret and Colonel Potter are warming up in the Oak Club. Hawkeye shows up with BJ and Winchester. And then actually there, I said earlier, there's only one line. That's not correct at all. There's the first line here is when Hawkeye says, these are the new kids on the block, BJ and Charles Winchester. So, okay, because obviously he has not met either of these guys. Again, it's a line too easy to miss if you're not really super paying attention to what that means exactly. But anyway, they all huddle around the little table. Winchester orders a cognac, and then Klinger says, I'll have a cognac too with a beer chaser, which is Winchester finds
The
deeply
look on
offensive.
Winchester's face, always that look of, oh Lord, I have to be with these people all the time.
I wonder how much cognac is, right? Because we've established that you do get charged at the O Club, and that's probably more expensive than a beer, for Pete's
Oh,
sakes,
definitely. Can you? Yeah, but the fact that they were able to get it at all when so often they aren't able to get good anything, even the supplies that they need. So, can you imagine the amount of horse trading that Klinger had to do in order to get that cognac to begin with when everything else is so difficult?
You wonder if anybody even else orders it, right? Anybody even would even want to drink it, and at the unit would even probably just sit there and just for Winchester. So then there is another line, again referring to the past episode, where Borelli says, "You still got that cuckoo who runs around dressed like Dame May Whitty?" And Klinger does. It says, "At your service, sir." Now, for those who don't know who that is, Dame May Whitty, just May Whitty, and then she was given the title Dame. She was a British stage and film actress, and she did a lot of charity work. She became almost just as much, apparently, just as famous for her charity work as her film and stage work. So that's who they're referring to. I don't think I've ever seen her in anything, to my memory. But that's obviously, when I was a kid, I was like, I don't know who that is, but I guess she sounds like Klinger when Klinger does the at your service, sir. Like, okay, all right, that's whatever it is. So then Borelli and Hawkeye immediately start the whole gist of this episode is that he starts kind of bossing Hawkeye around. They change seats because that way he could be closer to the warmth of the stove or whatever. And then, of course, everyone has to change drinks because everybody's drinks are now out of order. And then Borelli is like, hey, you got to open your coat. And Hawkeye's like, I'm cold. He's like, oh, you're cold because the heat can't get to you. That sounds like nonsense, right? You live, that doesn't sound like that makes sense, any sense at all.
No, it doesn't make any sense. Especially not from a doctor. I mean, unless it's some like idea they had in the 50s before they really understood how heat works. But other than that, it doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. Bundle up, for goodness sake.
What are you doing? So that's when they start talking about the graft, and initially everyone is kind of skeptical that this is going to work. Winchester says such a procedure of such delicacy would take hours and hours, and Borelli is like, please. He's like, yeah, I understand that most of them you're not going to have the time to do it, but in case you ever do have the time to do it, wouldn't you like to be able to know how to do it? And they were like, yes, of course. Like, why would we not do that? And then they decide we're going to reconvene in the morning and we'll go over it then. And everyone takes off except for Hawkeye and Borelli. And Borelli even gets into what kind of drinks you should be having. And, he is being just ridiculous. Like, leave me alone. I'm an adult. I know what I
Completely.
want.
Yeah, it's like the worst person to come to a family get together at Christmas or Thanksgiving, trying to boss everyone else around, and it's the person you never want to see at these gatherings that you try to avoid. I just can't. It stresses me out to watch all of these interactions because I would hate for anyone to tell me how to do any of these things, and it's so constant. So, I mean, I really do wonder if this is a real aspect of their relationship at some point during their lives, where it was just all of, perhaps when they were doing the vaudeville act together when Alan Alda was really little and he was constantly getting notes like this, and sort of he wrote it into the episode because, oh my gosh, it's infuriating.
You have to figure as father and son, they probably do have that dynamic a little bit. I've never really quite experienced it. The closest thing I can think of is like many, many years ago, I went to the San Diego Comic Book Convention, which is, this huge event, and I went with a bunch of friends, and we went, and a friend of a friend came with us, and this guy, I guess due to insecurity, had to know about everything. He had to be the expert on every aspect of life, whether it was traffic, how to catch a plane properly, how to order a drink. Like he and I didn't take it. I didn't let it get me mad because I was like, well, I'm only going to have to spend a couple days with this guy and I don't really care. Mm-hmm. But you could see it, that there was so deep insecurity that he had to be the expert. And so we were all sitting in a big group. We had met a bunch of girls at a Comic-Con. Yes, it does happen. And we were all sitting around and I decided to test this guy by bringing up a subject that the rest of us knew about that he could not have known about, namely, which was having attended the same art school, because we were all there because we had all gone to the same art school, except for this one guy. And I brought that up, and then he proceeded to tell me what it was like at the school.
And wow. Just,
I was like, oh, okay, I got it. Like, this guy just... Okay.
Yeah, know-it-all who also needs to be the center of attention and will just let you know about everything. Yep.
I've seen those people too. I'm seeing a bit of Dr. Borelli in this guy to that point. So anyway, meanwhile, everyone goes back to Potter's tent and they start talking about the theme of the party that they're going to throw for Hawkeye. And they have all these grandiose ideas. Mulcahy says, how about a masquerade party? And like, again, where is everybody getting this stuff at the 477th for these things? Where are you going to have any of these things?
Well, I mean, they have been able to get gorilla outfits. We know that Henry wore some kind of King Neptune outfit that he was in trouble with. With
the jewel in his belly button. That's right. Yes.
Jewel in his belly button. So, you know, they could make this work. Goodness knows Klinger's got enough dresses that he could, you know, share with all of the nurses.
I guess.
Perhaps some of the other members of the camp. But yeah, it's not realistic. And why would Father Mulcahy of all people want to do some kind of masquerade?
Masquerade
right for a priest.
That just seems, well, it's cold, I guess, so nobody's going to go dress scantily. But yeah, you would think it would lend itself to people in provocative non-army approved outfits or something. But those were more in the Henry days. Under Potter, they didn't have as much of that going on. So by the way, I said it was Potter's tent. It is not. It is the swamp, because you can actually see the still in the background. It's the angle. It's a low angle. We generally don't see the swamp quite exactly from this angle. And Winchester suggests a bunch of suggestions that are all classy, high-end, you know, music and stuff that quotes from St. Vincent Millay, you know, all these, and people were like, this is for Pierce. It's clearly he's just wanting to throw a party for himself. And then Klinger says, I got it. Imagine, if you will, the world's biggest salami. And of course, Winchester retorts with, you don't have to imagine, Klinger, we're looking at it. So this is just it's getting absolutely nowhere. Then Hawkeye shows up, and of course, they all have to pretend, you know, oh, yeah, we're just sitting here. And they joke about they're talking about the upcoming baseball season. And Hawkeye's like, you're talking about baseball in January? And she's like, well, you know, you don't want to put these things off to the last minute. It's all just very, very silly. Have you, James, ever been thrown a surprise birthday party?
No. Well, okay. It wasn't necessarily a surprise party, but there was one birthday that I had in my adult life where I was visiting my parents. My parents live several states away, and all of my college friends live in the same area. And I wasn't intending to see them. And then on my birthday, I was like all grubby and not dressed up. And all of a sudden, there are my friends and their wives showing up at my parents' house, which was a really wonderful surprise. But it was kind of like, okay, I'm not prepared. I'm a little grumpy because I was being interrupted. So like... I understand people who absolutely hate surprise parties because they just like to be prepared for everything and they don't like the sort of the shock. So I can understand that, but I can also understand how it would be sort of great to get all that attention. So, you know, everyone has their own opinion about that, but I can totally understand someone like, no, I don't hate surprise parties. I don't want anything like this.
Yeah. I've never been thrown one, but that's because I've made it very clear. I do not ever want one. Don't ever do that to me. I don't really want to be the center of attention, despite the fact I host several podcasts, but I wouldn't want that. And maybe I would want a birthday party, but never a surprise one. That would just, that just holds absolutely no appeal to me. Now, you mentioned earlier that BJ is quite the prankster, and we know that even in Sidney Friedman, right, has just learned that BJ is an enigma, and how he gets his jollies is basically being a prankster. And after everybody leaves, Hawkeye kind of, you know, goes up to BJ and is like, this is getting worse and worse and worse. And BJ says, you know, you should get some rest, Hawkeye. Tomorrow's a big day. And the way he says it, it does make me think this is almost for BJ's own entertainment than it is for anybody else's, right? He's just doing this just almost to see if he can pull it off.
Well, that, and, you know, this must be his sort of reaction to boredom. I mean, he did create the whole The Party episode, which was a little bit more from a sentimental angle.
Mm-hmm.
But I think his prankster brain is like, how do I keep myself happy and maybe get some jollies, you know, from everyone else too? And he just came up with this. And it ultimately, we find out later in the episode, it doesn't matter what the basis of the party is, as long as something happens.
Yeah.
But I kind of wonder if, like, he's like, okay, so once I get everyone together, what kind of pranks can I pull on these people?
Yeah.
I would never trust BJ. Like, he's a great guy, but, like, I'm not a fan of jokes. Like, April Fool's is a big thing in my house with my wife and child, but I am completely removed of it because I hate practical jokes.
Oh, me too.
So I would not like, I would always be slightly nervous around BJ for that very reason.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. I'm glad you brought that up. I've heard stories about, you know, actors on sets, and there are some mm-hmm. actors that like to pull practical jokes. And I would be like, even if it's meant well, that would put my teeth on edge. To know that I could be that, that would not be good. So that is like the one, I think I probably mentioned this in an episode long ago. I love BJ. BJ is my favorite character on the show. Of all the characters I ever wanted to emulate as a child, it's BJ Honeycutt. But that is the one part of him that I don't like and don't want to be part of, is his prankster thing. That's the one thing I'd be like, yeah, no, leave me out of this, BJ. Sorry. But there's something just in the way Mike Farrell says it. He doesn't even make eye contact. Right? He doesn't even make eye contact with Hawkeye. He says, tomorrow's got a big day. Like, he's just really dining out on this. Like, what a dick.
Yeah, I would not be able to sleep. If someone said that in that tone of voice, I would not be able to sleep.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I would worry for my life.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So we then get a scene of Klinger working on the cake, and he's misspelled birthday. Why Klinger has to work on the cake? Don't we have a cook? But okay, maybe this is like special dispensation. Or it's supposedly, you know, I mean, it's not a surprise party. The whole unit is in on it because they're asking Hawkeye questions about his life. But it's, you know, this is just to get a scene in with BJ as opposed to, you know, Igor or whatever mm-hmm. making the cake, which is fine. We have to write stuff for our 7 cast members. That's how this is going to work. So we get in the next morning, Borelli shows up to Potter's office for the meeting. Now, he immediately tells BJ where to sit, which I like, right? I like that it's not just directed at Hawkeye. He does throw that at, he does it to everybody. It's obviously putting Hawkeye most at edge, but I like that it's not just in Hawkeye's mind. It's, no, Borelli's doing this to everybody. BJ sits where he wants to sit. Leave him alone.
Yeah, I mean, it is, I think it's a little bit better that it's not focused simply on Hawkeye, that it is all the way around. But it just speaks to, like, that there are people that have that personality where it doesn't matter who you are going to be told exactly what to do.
Yeah.
And it's just incredibly uncomfortable when it happens.
Yeah, and he even mentions...
Go ahead. It's shocking to me that this happens in front of Colonel Potter, who doesn't usually take... you know, someone trying to organize or lead or boss around when he's around, like, he really doesn't tend to like that. So mm-hmm. it's kind of shocking that Borelli kind of gets away with it in front of Colonel Potter.
He even says to Potter, I reserved a space here for you, right up here for you. No, you didn't. You just showed up. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Like,
they've all been there. What are you talking about, Borelli? Like, okay. Yeah. But before they even get to the lecture, Klinger says there's a phone call from Battalion Aid, and there is a patient who has got this serious injury. And so they initially want to send BJ, and Hawkeye says, no, I can't let him do that. He says, I'm back here. And BJ's like, no, you should go. And they have this fake fight. And Hawkeye says, no, I would feel bad if I was back here, back at the 477th. Well, my pal is up there facing danger, freezing his clavy, on his wedding anniversary. First of all, Clavey, funny word. And then, of course, Margaret's like, what? And then Hawkeye's like, his Clavey. And so I love that he's playing dumb because he knows what he said. And then he's like, no, it was Clavey. Oh, no. Oh, his wedding anniversary. And then he does the, oh, you weren't supposed to. That was supposed to be our secret. And so I love that Hawkeye is like, okay, sir has been returned, man. There you go.
It's one of the, I think one of the few times that BJ shenanigans have been put back on him, appropriately so. And I'm glad it's this is sort of the subplot of the episode where they're trying to find, you know, any kind of excuse to have a party, even though they've never needed an excuse to party before in the Henry Trapper days. They just did stuff. So like, why do you need an excuse?
Yeah.
To have a party anyway.
Again, I think under Colonel Potter, things are a little tighter. So that's they have true. To come up that's with true. Some reason as opposed to, no, we'll just dress like Neptune and that's fine. They'll have a jewel in my belly button. It's all good. Poor Klinger has to rework the cake. He's just finished all the piping. Just for time for Margaret to come in and tell him, no, we're changing it to anniversary. So now it's got to say happy anniversary. So then we get to Hawkeye and Borelli in kind of the similar shot that we saw in the party. You mentioned the party episode where we're kind of over the hood of the ambulance as they're driving up and they're talking about where to go. And then Borelli even says, I've got a more direct route to battalion aid. And you're like, this guy's not even, as he says, he's not even like his rank is honorary. What is he talking about? He knows all the back roads of the... And he says, I came from the 863rd this way. Like, one time? What are you talking about?
And it's in the dark. And we have seen characters get completely lost in the daytime, particularly with radar driving, and radar knew what he was about. Oh, it's just, it drives me crazy. And, you know, I know that we live in the era of GPS and people don't really get lost anymore. And
oh, I
the
still
art
manage
of map.
To do it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can.
I'm that
GPS
bad, though.
Cannot be
I'm
trusted.
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, even, it's just so dumb. Like, follow the map. A lot of this stuff in this episode is so triggering for me because it just, you know, rubs my own logic brain the wrong way. And I would never let anyone tell me which direction to drive when I'm looking at a map. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, all this would drive, like I said about the practical jokes, how often and how easy it would be to get lost driving around Southeast Korea, especially when knowing that if you took a wrong turn, you could get killed by someone with a rifle, would just drive me into such spasms of, because I get lost just in my, you know, driving around. And I'm like, I mean, I don't get lost anymore, again, thanks to the combination of, as you said, directions, GPS, and my wife. I don't get lost anymore. But when I used to, oh my God. We went to visit my sister who lives in Myrtle Beach last year, and we got there at night. And surprisingly, on the way to Myrtle Beach, which is this huge tourist destination, all the roads that take to Myrtle Beach, if you're coming from one direction, are all back roads, and none of them have signs. And we were driving at night, and we were losing our minds because we were just like, where the hell are we going? This is so... Mm-hmm. And I wasn't worried about somebody shooting us at us at that point. So, the Borelli's just crazy. And so then he makes it even worse. Hawkeye starts eating like a little hunk of cheese, and Borelli goes, you got cheese, huh? And I love that Hawkeye immediately goes, cheese, yeah. And there's a pause. Now what? Because he knows what's coming.
Yep. And then, of course, he brings out, you know, French mustard, which I was thinking to this when I was watching this episode. Would you care for some Grey Poupon?
Yeah.
I wanted him to say that out loud.
But of course.
Although I think maybe this predates those commercials that were so popular during the day. But gosh.
And how, he carries
why would
around
he have
a
mustard?
Jar of mustard in his jacket?
Yes. There's only one person maybe in the entire camp would have mustard like this, and it would be Charles. Because
maybe.
it would pair well with, you know, smoked oysters or
guess,
one of the other things
right?
he would have. But
it's I'm not going to give the show this much credit because it isn't, but it does remind me of the scene in, have you ever seen the MASH movie?
Yes. Oh, yes.
It reminds me of the scene where Trapper John shows up for the first time. And
with
they
the
offer him a
olives.
martini, and he's like, "Do you have any olives?" And they're like,
Yeah.
"We're 2 miles away from the front." And he pulls out a glass jar of olives, and he just happens to have that in his jacket. So now those guys are functioning alcoholics, and that doesn't
Oh,
surprise
yeah.
me, as opposed to having a jar of mustard. But okay. But yeah, Borelli is just being massively annoying. And I have to wonder, what did Robert Alda think as he's reading this, right? Knowing that his son wrote all this, is he like, "Do you really think I'm this bad? Is that what this is?"
That's why I think that they must have dealt with this kind of thing earlier on in their relationship, and it's something that it sort of helps work. They must have worked through it at some other time, and this is sort of a reflection of it, and it's helping them work through the current, tension that they have. Because I can't imagine if Robert Alda didn't like this script that he would have agreed to do this, because it doesn't paint him in a very kind light until the very, very end.
Yeah. I guess, you don't want to turn down being on a giant television, one of the most popular TV shows in the world. You're not going to turn that down, even if it does paint you in a slightly unflattering light. But yeah, you have to wonder, right? Did he read it and was like, okay, Alan. All right. Okay. They get to aid station, and just before they go in, Hawkeye sort of says, okay, let's get something clear. I'm the doctor in charge of this. I make the medical decisions. You're here as an advisor, basically. And Borelli, of course, agrees to that, knowing he's not going to agree to that. And there we meet inside, we meet Corporal Jarvis, played by Anthony Alda. Name sounds familiar. Born 1956, passed away in 2009. So even though he is 20 years younger than his half brother, Alan, he is no longer with us, which is unfortunate. He must have died relatively, like in his 60s. He didn't have, a huge career. He was in a couple of movies. He's in Melvin and Howard, the Jonathan Demme movie, which is a terrific movie. And then most recently, sort of recently, obviously he's been gone a while. He was in the Nicolas Cage National Treasure movie, and he just had a bunch of small parts here and there. Now, I remember thinking, boy, this seems like a huge age difference. And I saw that this is from a second marriage that Robert Alda had, and we had another set of kids with that other wife. And so there, that is the explanation for the relatively huge age difference between the two of them. And so anyway, Hawkeye and Borelli start working on him, and they're bickering already back and forth. And I do like the Jarvis character Anthony Alda plays here, because I like that he's immediately like, "What is the hell? What is the wrong with the two of you? Like, what is this? You're supposed to be professional." And I kind of like that you have somebody here that can stand there and be like, "What? Hey, knock it off, you two." I mean, as opposed to having it be, Klinger. Or you know what I mean? Or Father Mulcahy is coming to the front. It's this new character that we're meeting. And you get to the point where even Borelli starts telling Hawkeye how to scrub his hands, which again is completely nuts. And then finally, Jarvis kind of stops them both, and he says, "Look, I've worked with this guy for 8 months, day and night. Maybe he's just another patient to you, but he's damn special to me. Understand that?" And they're kind of shamed into it. So it's a nice little performance by Anthony Alda.
Yeah, I agree. And it does sort of bring back, like, was this a natural sort of set of relationships? Did he play the sort of intermediary between the two, trying to calm them down? Because in families, if you have those sort of bickering adults, there tends to be a third family member, or even sometimes like a child, is like, "Stop it. Like, that's enough. Like, we're all here together." That sort of comes in and tries to mediate things. So it really does feel like these three know each other well. Like, the way that they interact, it doesn't feel just like acting. Like, there is a definitely sort of rapport that you can see between the three of them when they're all together on screen.
So Borelli keeps pushing Hawkeye. He tells him, "We can go back to the, we can go back and do the graft if we have time for it at the unit." And he tells Hawkeye, "You should leave it open, leave the wound open, so we can go back to it." And Hawkeye's like, no, I'm going to suture it." And Borelli keeps arguing, and Hawkeye finally says, "Look, I have his whole life in my hands. I have all of him in his life: his arms, his legs, his belly button, everything." And that gets Jarvis to kind of interject yet again. And we say again, Pirelli is just being completely out of line. And then, you know, he'd like to see both sides of everything, but shut the hell up, right? He's Hawkeye is the chief surgeon of the 477th. He's done a million of these. Just let Hawkeye, just Pirelli, come on.
Yeah, because Borelli, you know, he does have experience in other wars, but we know that wars change and medicine changes so quickly. And Hawkeye has sort of the most recent experience doing meatball surgery. And yes, Borelli obviously has experience with nerve grafts, but like the face is less important than the other things that will cause this important person, to Corporal Jarvis, to die. So let's get those done first and worry about the other thing later. You know, I just let Hawkeye do his. What he's an expert at, to do his thing. Yeah, it's just being a busybody.
Yep. So we're back at the 477th, and they do throw the anniversary party for BJ. I love the toast. Hawkeye says, and here's the Hawkeye who couldn't be here tonight, but don't worry, I'll save a little punch for him. Channeling the Mash Blair people, reference to period of adjustment. He's already punched Hawkeye once this season. I maybe don't joke
Oh
about that
boy.
again. And later on in season nine, when they do Oh How We Danced, they will be talking about BJ's anniversary. And I wonder, did anybody go, hey, wait a minute, isn't your anniversary in January when we did the thing? But okay, we're not worrying about that.
We
So
have our excuse to party. Well, we're just going to party right now.
it's fine. It's fine. So while they're having the party, a bunch of soldiers arrive. And they're really freezing to death, and so they want to give them all, like, heat them up a little. And one of them kind of remarks, you know, geez, do you guys party like this all the time? That is the character's name is Sergeant Herbert, played by an actor named Darren Kelly, no relation. He has a bunch of TV credits like Law and Order SVU, Kate and Ally, and most recently The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. So he's kind of kept working over these years. And then he finally sort of says, you know, you guys do this all the time. And he's kind of suggesting we guys are obviously don't work very hard if you're throwing this party. And BJ's like, no, let's see if, you know, you kind of caught us on a rare moment. Let's see if we could do something to thaw out, even says our reputation. And so then we're back to the aid station. Hawkeye and Borelli are working on it. They hear some explosions. I love that they stop and pause and they get scared, and it's Jarvis, who of course is living with this every day, is like, keep working, just keep going, keep going. I like that he's pushing them, like, enough, you know, like, stop worrying about it. Again, it's Anthony Ola got a good showcase for him in an episode
Yes,
featuring
he did.
Robert Alda. So then they do get hit, a bunch of stuff falls, and the stuff that falls on our actors, I think, would barely break the skin, let alone
Yes.
breaking your arm or something, but we have to.
Thank you. I felt the same way. I mean, I realized that you have limited things that you can do on a soundstage. But they really did pay for a lot of, you know, pyrotechnics when they did, you know, craters forming from bombs and things like that in previous episodes. So you kind of wonder if they could have done something a little bit more serious. But if they weren't going to hire, you know, stunt people, if they were just going to do it with these two, you couldn't cause a lot of harm. But it's difficult to buy that it would cause a broken arm and a sprained wrist just from some, you know, pieces of board coming down. But yeah, okay, that's
It's
fine.
like, Pirelli, do you suffer from like that hollow bone disease? Like, what's going on, man? You barely fell over and you broke your arm, but okay. Again, we got to do what we got to do. So then we're back in the 477th, and BJ is talking to the sergeant, and then he finally realizes, oh, wait a minute, I can use this guy to get out of this jam. And he says, hey, everybody, it's Sergeant Herbert's birthday. And they're all celebrating Sergeant. And of course, he looks baffled. It's like, what the hell? And they start handing him presents, all the that they've wrapped. And I gotta wonder, like, what were these presents that were originally bought for Hawkeye and were supposed to? And he gets like just like 10 presents, like, quick, and there's wrapping paper. Like, where did they get all this stuff?
You gotta sell the image now that all of this party was being developed in it. You know, hey,
Yep.
maybe he came home, maybe he went home with some really nice stuff. You know, you
Maybe
never
so.
know.
Maybe so. So, and then we see Klinger sigh and scrape BJ's name off of the cake as the little runner there. So then we're back at the aid station, and we see Borelli has got his arm in a sling, and Hawkeye has his wrist in a sling, and they are working together, obviously doing a left and right kind of thing. And you know, as MASH scripts go, you know, not the subtlest thing in the world,
No.
right? But okay.
I kind of wonder, and the resident MASH doctors that we have, Dr. Ange and Dr. Chris Lewis, can sort of describe whether or not this makes any logical sense. If there was, you know, maybe they could talk Corporal Jarvis through this surgery better than they could do it this way. I don't know. It just doesn't seem really realistic to try to perform a delicate surgery this way, but you know, it is MASH after all.
I would imagine that you, yeah, I see what you're saying, but I can't imagine that first of all, I mean, Jarvis's hand would start to I mean, you know what I mean? If someone said to me,
Yeah.
"Hey, my arm's broken, can you cut into this patient?" I'd be like, "What the hell are you talking about?" So maybe they figured that even one-handed on each one is better than, you know, letting a newbie try and do that and trying to explain it and things like that. Because I mean, as we know that, as they've explained in many episodes, Hawkeye has, you know, brilliant surgical hands, like in terms of
Special
the
gifts, yes.
special gifts, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and then Borelli says, you know, geez, I should have broken my arm an hour ago. And Hawkeye says, an hour ago, I would have broken it for you. And they get a little chuckle. And then we get a little moment of detente where Borelli mentions about closing the wound, and then it's Hawkeye who says, "How sure are you about leaving it open?" And Borelli says, "If positive, if he needs a nerve graft, that's the best way to go." And Hawkeye finally kind of stands down and says, "Okay." And they call each other Dr. Left and Dr. Right. Very cutesy.
Very cute, yeah.
I forgive it because he's talking to his dad. Like, okay, you know, like it's fine.
I mean, it really does feel like a very like almost like a separate kind of show between the three of them, that like it is the all the family drama show
Right.
when they're, you know, yes, it's still set in, you know, the aid station and whatnot, but between the three of them, you know, you could spin off a show with the three of them going home after the war and trying to, you know, all the aftermath or something like that to, you know,
There you go.
keep these relationships going.
There you go. So then we're back at the unit, and they perform the graft, and it goes really well, and everyone gives them a round of applause. And of course, our two doctors only have one good hand each, so they clap each other's hand, and that is the end of our episode. So it is definitely one of the most genial, nice, sanded down episodes of MASH there is. But kind of going back to our conversation at the top of the show, when you do 20 to 24 shows a month, excuse me, 20 to 24 shows a season, it's okay to have one or two that are like this because you have the range to do a bunch of other ones that are not quite the, you know what I mean? Like if they had done 20 of these where everyone is kind of cutesy and getting along, they all reconcile at the end, it would be a little treacly. But it's only a couple because then they're going to do others. And that's the benefit of doing so many shows as opposed to doing six a season. So that's the end of our episode.
Yeah, I mean, outside of season 4 and 5, you cannot have bangers every single episode. And you're right. You do, you know, when you have something as sort of deadly serious as dreams, you need, you
Yeah,
know, light more lighthearted
exactly.
episodes where there are lower stakes, and you know, everything can wrap up by the end of the 23-minute episode.
There are two, the next two episodes are really dark, right?
Yes.
Really dark. We've got one guy trying to kill himself, and then, as you mentioned, the dreams episode. So yeah, you need a little bit of like, okay, we can be a little light here on this one. So do you have a favorite line or joke from this episode?
Yes, and it's from the very beginning, and I just like how it sort of sounds. It's when they're sort of talking about the stories and everything, and Margaret says to Charles, all we ever get out of you is polysyllabic put downs, and then there's a cheer afterwards, and I'm like a very rhythmic person, and so like I was playing it over my head. Like I've heard a line like this before that has the same kind of rhythm. And if you go to Princess Bride and you have Vizzini saying "you hippopotamic landmass" saying it to Fezzik, and it has like even the same number of syllables. And so I love kind of really like sharp lines like that, and plus the cheer at the end that everyone knows that Charles just is disagreeable in this very same way, pompous in the same way.
Is it the alliteration, or is it of
I
polysyllabic
think it
put
helped.
down, or is it both, the
I
word
think
itself?
it's both. It's the alliteration and then like sort of just the rhythm of the words. Plus, it's Margaret that says it, you know, and it's something that Charles would say. Like those are the kind of words that he would say himself, polysyllabic. And the fact that it comes from Margaret is just wonderful.
It's a great word, polysyllabic, right? Because it means what it sounds like, you know, polysyllabic. There's a lot of syllables in there, and it rolls off the tongue very
It
nice.
rolls, yes, it does.
Polysyllabic, you know, it is kind of nice. So, my favorite one is the runner about the cake, and I like when Klinger doesn't want to fix it, and he's like, "No one's going to notice." Right, no one's going to notice there's an extra H, and of course Winchester keeps saying fix the cake, and then Mulcahy wanders in, and he's like, "Oh, let's let Father Mulcahy decide." And I like that Winchester goes, "What do you think of the cake, Father Mulcahy?" I like that he just throws in the extra H, and then of course Klinger's like, "You gave him a hint," which is like, "Come on, guys." Mulcahy knows how to spell birthday, Klinger. Come on, but I just love the way. I like that Winchester reduces himself to Klinger's level, right? For that moment of just kind of being silly, a little Mulcahy, this makes me laugh. So, yeah, it's Lend a Hand. It's, I'd say, one of the lesser ones of the season, but even the weakest MASH episode is probably better than most TV shows, right? That were on TV at the
Agreed.
time.
Agreed.
So, you know, there you go. Well, James, thank you so much for coming on. It was great to be able to have you on the show and talk to you for the first time. But why don't you tell people where they can find you out on the internet?
So I have to thank you, Rob, for having this podcast because for the longest time I wanted to have my own, and I didn't feel comfortable until I started listening to the way that you have interviewed your guests and your sort of rhythm in doing these podcasts, and it gave me enough confidence to do my own. My podcast is called Baloney Detection with Dr. K. It's a very, very different kind of podcast. I'm a chemistry professor, and I believe a lot in scientific communication and scientific literacy and all about fighting misinformation. And it's really a lot about that. That's where sort of the baloney detection comes from. It's a quote from a Carl Sagan chapter from one of Carl Sagan's books. And I talk about scientific misinformation. I talk about teaching mental health, all sorts of other things. RFK Jr. is providing me a lot of fodder for my podcast these days. If you want to listen to the podcast, it's Baloney Detection with Dr. K on Acast, Spotify, and iTunes. And we've got Baloney Detection Podcast, all one word, Instagram. And that's where you can find me.
All right. I have to say, if you had told me that the phrase baloney detection was from something, you didn't make it up, it was from the culture, and
No.
you had said, "Name me who you think said that," Carl Sagan would not be on the first 5,000 people that I would have thought would have said such a thing. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. I love Carl Sagan. Very.
I mean, I can't take credit for something that sounds so good. I would not want to take credit, particularly from Carl Sagan.
Yeah, totally. So, well, that's good. It's kind of what we were talking about earlier about MASH being comfort food. Like right now, I find The Pitt to be comfort food, even though it's an incredibly stressful show because it's people
Oh, it
with their
is,
hands blown off, and but yet it's the competence porn of it, of like, hey, these are people that really care about other people and are really good at their jobs, and that is we're low on that, and so therefore the show is comforting to watch, even though you wouldn't think it necessarily is comforting because it is such a high stress situation. But I'm like, it's a TV show. Like, I'm not living it. I'm experiencing it vicariously through the show. So it's, you know, we get our comfort food in different places. So.
But Noah Wyle is so good in that show, and I think there are reflections of Hawkeye in him.
Oh,
You know,
totally.
the quality of his work, but also sort of like the vulnerability and the mental health. Like I think that really that show is top notch. Please, you know, anyone who's listening who hasn't seen that, have a watch. If you can deal with some of the gore, it's really good.
I will say, I used to watch ER as well, and Alan Alda was on ER, He had a he had a guest spot of like two or three episodes, if I recall, like a slight, recurring guest star over a couple shows, and he played a doctor. And he, the gist of it was he was suffering from dementia. Like he was starting to suffer from dementia because he was older. And it's funny to think that he's, that was 20 years ago that those episodes aired. And thank God Mr. Alda still with us at 90 years old. God bless him. But and I love that he was on the show because I felt like it was obviously a nod to MASH, but you don't cast Alan Alda as a doctor and not have that over hanging over you because he's like one of the most famous doctors of, maybe the most famous TV doctor of all time. And but I didn't love that storyline because it just made me sad. I'm like, I don't want to see Alan Alda suffering from dementia. That I don't want to see that. And so far, the Pitt has stayed away from that kind of cutesy casting, but man, would I kill for one of the MASH. Unfortunately, very not many of them left, but I would kill to see one of the MASH doctors show up on the Pitt as a patient, as a relative, as somebody, just as a nice little nod of like, hey, this is trauma surgery. Here's this other show that was about trauma surgery. So often on the Fire and Water Podcast Network, we make things happen. We talk about things on the show, and people, we will a lot of in the comic book sphere, like we'll talk about an old series, and then all of a sudden, DC Comics will say, "Hey, we're collecting that series that's been dormant," and we're like, "Wow, we've been talking about." And so, I think those powers you must use those powers for good. And so, I'm just saying, I'm putting it out there. Because by the time anyone hears this, the Pitt season two will have wrapped up. The work there, they've already been renewed for season three. Let's have this happen. Let's get Mike Farrell or Alan Alda or Jamie Farr or Gary Berghoff. Let's get one of them on the show in some capacity. I think that would be quite nice.
Yes, let's wish that into existence. And speaking, if anyone else wants more comfort food, Murder, She Wrote is comfort food, and there are a lot of actors from MASH, both major actors and minor actors. Harry Morgan and William Christopher and David Ogden Stiers, just in the first three seasons, plus other familiar faces. Plus, I think they are doing a new version of Murder, She Wrote coming up soon. So
I
another
think
one
that's a
that's been brought
movie. I
back.
think they're doing a movie of that. So yeah. But yes, and there was I would now we're going down this road. There was Diagnosis Murder with Dick Van Dyke. There was one episode that had like Jamie Farr, William Christopher, and Loretta Swit all in one episode, all together.
Oh, I'll have to look at that one now. I'll have to find that one now.
So there's that one too. So there, I mean, that one right on the nose. So anyway, well, again, thank you, James, for coming on. It was great talking to you.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Thank you all for listening. Of course, you can find all the back episodes on our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can find me on Blue Sky under Rob Kelly Creative. And if you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, please go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which has been name checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Adam Ackerman, Dennis Bailey, Daryl Clark, James K., Michael Kelly, David Mann, Matt McLean, Lisa P., Brady Palmer, Joe Perino, Stan Peel, Michael Porter, Nicholas Prom, Rob Riley, Adam Sanders, Stefan Van Schaik, Britt Schramm, Billy Schulman, and Mike Thomas. I really do appreciate the support. So that is good to do it for this week, everybody. We'll see you next week. But until then, that is all.
Beach, could I talk to you for a minute, please?
Excuse me? Yeah, sure. What's the problem?
I've been getting some very funny questions tonight, like, how big is my foot? What's my favorite color? Two people ask me if I've ever had a pet.
They're interested in you. You have to realize these people are very bored.